Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
The bell is cue for us to begin. I have a lot of information I want to share. My intent is to leave time open at the end. If you have any questions, someone will be willing to bring your microphone so your question can be heard. And I love to answer questions. I told Paul most often I'm not in a situation where I talk about the India work during worship service that questions can be asked. Most of the time it's not during a Bible study time. This is a Bible study time, and we will be looking at Scripture and talking about what's going on in India. I'm glad to be here this morning. I'm so thankful for your involvement in several mission works throughout the world and stateside. That's a big deal. I go a lot of places, and I see a lot of congregations, a lot of people, and I can say something very unique about West Huntsville is that you have a full mind of mission. You're wide open your vision to see. I appreciate the missions committee and correspondence with them, and appreciate their work also. I wish Dad could be here this morning, as Dad and Paul had an idea several weeks ago. It says, hey, we'll get Glenn up there on the stage, and anyone has questions, and we have two people to shoot questions off of. Dad's always a resource. He'll always be. As long as he's here, you ever want to ask any questions, because he's been there. Any of you ladies want to talk to Mom about what's it like working with the women in India? She'll be more than happy to answer your questions. I'll put her on the spot. But they'll be glad to help you. I'll be glad to help you in any way. And if there's time at the end, if you have questions you'd like to ask, if you don't feel comfortable asking them in an open setting like this, please ask me afterwards, because we want to relay as much information and be as clear as possible about the work in India so that you know what's going on and can have your questions answered. All our goals were met in 2020. You may not be aware of all the goals that we have. What happens usually after the January campaign is that the team will come back. Our contact, Brother John Ratnam in India, will talk with Brother John while we're in India, come back and meet with the elders at Willett, and we'll discuss our goals for the year. I'll share those goals in a few minutes. You know what happened in 2020. The team came back. Dad was part of that team, came back the end of January. And Jack Honeycutt was a coordinator at that time, sat down with the elders at Willett, and they set some goals. Every year we set goals. And all those goals were met in 2020. I appreciate your continued support of the work in India. It's a great work, and I look forward to being able to go there as soon as possible, Lord willing. I want to tell you, make sure it's clear that you understand every penny goes to India. We want to make that very, very first statement and clear as possible. If someone says, I want to buy a bicycle for a preacher in India, it's $100 for a bicycle, and they utilize that bicycle every day. It's not that we send $98.50 because we have a fee or something to take care of here. When someone gives money to India and they say, we want it to go to widows, orphans, a church building, a bicycle, that's exactly where the money goes. We're not the United Way or other organizations that keep a large sum of the donation or expenditures, salaries, and so forth. That's not the case. So when you say, I want money to go to India, and the congregation has said, the elders said, we want money to go to India for this reason, that's exactly what happens with the money. We have a newsletter and a financial statement. The newsletter goes out every 2 months. The financial statement goes out each month. If you would like to receive those digitally, I email it to the Church Building and Missions Committee, but if you would like to receive that individually, it's very easy for me to put you on the mailing list. And you can see those things firsthand when they come out, because you are an active part in the India work. And we want you to know. We're very transparent. We want you to see what's happening. We want you to see where the money is going and how much, of course. We're very transparent. We have nothing to hide, no reason to hide anything. We want you to feel comfortable asking questions or looking into all that we say and do. Here are our goals for this year. We sometimes have to change up some areas of goals depending on the need in India. The need that will never go away in India is the need for Bibles. $100,000 in Bibles for India. A New Testament is a dollar. We can purchase a New Testament for a dollar. And I've looked I've been in a lot of Walmarts. I don't think in Dollar General you can buy a New Testament for a dollar. But in India, they can purchase a New Testament for a dollar. And, of course, an Old and New Testament combine what we call the Bible for $3.50. Most villages where work is being done, they will give a New Testament because they're cheaper and you can buy more of them. The goal is, if you're going to put something in someone's hand, the New Testament is the goal. Because in the New Testament, one who knows nothing about Jesus, who knows nothing about the church or about salvation, can go and read it or have it read to them, and they can see the plan of God. Of course, we're not saying the Old Testament is not important. It is. But for the sake of getting as many Bibles in as many hands, the New Testament so often is the one that's passed out in villages. All of the preachers in India, the students who go through the school, the men who are preaching, of course, they'll have an Old and New Testament. They do not shun from the Old Testament. They'll preach the Old Testament, but we try to pass out as many Bibles as possible, and we do that many times passing out New Testament. So you can do your math. What that might equate to is a goal of $100,000 in Bibles. Preachers, we have a lot of preachers that are in need of support, that are supported monthly. A preacher can be supported for $50 a month. That's a preacher who is full-time involved in the gospel. You'll see some images later of what they do during the week. It's not just they go preach on Sunday and they're going into the fields and working or tending livestock the rest of the week. They're fully committed, and that's $50 a month for a preacher. There are 9 orphanages and 8 widows' homes. The orphanages range sometimes as many as 50 children. That can fluctuate, give or take. But the idea behind that orphanage is the government has no system to help. So if a child's parents die or their parents neglect them and leave them on the street, there is a safe place for them to go. And the best part about it is those children are taught the gospel. And so many times their children, when they're of age, they know what they need to do in order to be pleasing to God. They choose to put on Christ in baptism. And in India, there are arranged marriages. I say to my young son all the time, and I'll tell you young people, arranged marriages are not a bad thing. They're really not. It works in India. But imagine, though, from the moment you're old enough to understand one man, one woman for life, you know that your parents or someone's going to pick a spouse for you. It's not a big deal. So imagine those young people your age in India who know in just a few years someone's going to pick a spouse for them, and they're going to pick a Christian. That's a great plan, and it's a great system. And we continue to support the orphans and what's done in India. The widows, they live there next to the orphanages. Those are widows indeed because of their health or age. They cannot live on their own, take care of themselves. So many times they'll be there and they take care of the children. For $10, that's to help cover their food cost. And so sometimes mom can tell you they'll give what are called saris. Those are the dresses, the outfits that the women wear. And sometimes they'll give those to the women in the widows' homes. Printing, there's a printing press the church has there. A lawyer in Tennessee years ago donated some money to use printing press, but a used printing press is used. And it's efficient, and it gets the job done. Their songbooks are printed. Their evangelistic material, their Bible study material, is all printed in their language of Telugu. And as funds are supplied, they print materials. Also, the goal this year to have 15 church buildings built. You can't even imagine how many villages and congregations of the Lord's people are waiting. They want to have a building. They want to be able to meet. And not just because they want to say, we have a building, but because it's a tool. We'll talk more about that later. Wells and baptistries. Because the work is expanding into areas in which it has not gone into before, because it's going into mountainous regions or somewhere way far out where there's not an adequate source of water, many times a well has to be dug, sometimes 900 feet deep. And with that well, it serves two purposes. Really, three. It's a source of water for the Christians and for the people in the village. And it's a means to fill up a baptistry, a concrete trough, we would call it. But it's an adequate, useful, effective means. They don't have to travel an hour away, or they don't have to wait until there's rainfall and then the creek's filled up. They can have a baptistry and can immerse the people immediately. The third thing, it's a tool for evangelism. You imagine someone in the village, they're hearing about Jesus, and they're seeing these people being baptized, and there's water, and they're coming to get water. It's a great, effective tool. They're very smart in India, utilizing every means possible. Bicycles, we mentioned that earlier. The goal is 100 bicycles for preachers. Some are riding to 3 or 4 villages on the Lord's Day to preach. And with that, they have portable PA systems. It's a portable speaker on the back with a microphone. They'll take that into the village. Maybe the congregation is meeting underneath the tree. Or maybe they put up a tarp and they're going to meet. And so they use that PA system. But what's unique about it is not for the members. We have a great PA system this morning. Otherwise, I would have to be yelling. We have a great PA system for our hearing. But in India, they use the PA system for the hearing of those who are not Christians. We'll talk more about that in a moment. A very long-term goal because of the expenses of having a television station. They are very well aware of GBN. Several years ago, some of the men from GBN went over and filmed a documentary. You can view that documentary, and it's about India and the work in India. They want to have a GBN in India. So there's a goal for that. It's a long-term goal because of the expense, but they want to do whatever they can to reach souls. And then something we'll talk about a little bit later is the Herald School of Biblical Studies. Those are our goals for this year. We appreciate your efforts in helping us in India through financial support and your prayers. Evangelism is still taking place in India. Despite how horrendous COVID has been throughout the whole world, if we take all the stories we hear and multiply them, it's still not up to what the Indians have faced. There are some points in India that it was so bad that three people were lying in a hospital bed together. And their hospitals are not like our hospitals, where you have your own private room, or maybe there's a divider in the room and there's adequate sanitary space. In India, it's not the case. There'll be bed after bed after bed, and sometimes there are three people on a bed and people lying in the floor because of COVID. And so, rightly so, the government has said, stay at home. Don't come out of a country of nearly 2 billion people. It makes sense. Don't go out into a village where there's going to be hundreds of thousands of people. But it didn't stop the Christians. Evangelism still took place because they understand the command of our Lord, Mark 16 and 15, to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Or Matthew 28, 18 and following. Go and make disciples, baptize and teach them. And so they've continued to do so. You can see in the pictures there I alluded to earlier in the bottom, the preachers are in white shirts. You can tell the preachers are, as opposed to the people who live in that hut there. They have their bicycle, and you may be able to tell he's holding a microphone. That's the use of the portable PA system. And they're going from village to village to village, and preachers are coming together, Christians are coming together, and they're going and spreading the gospel, and they're using this portable PA system on a bicycle. That's $400 worth of equipment. That's pretty expensive in India, but it's well worth it. Because you'll notice, there's no electricity coming into that hut. There's no lights. There's no satellite dish. They may have no connection to the outside world. They don't own a cell phone. So it means there has to be boots on the ground. You and I can use technology today, but we have to get out and knock doors. We have to. We have to talk to people. We can't post it just simply on the internet. That's a great tool, but we can't stop there. We have to continue, and we have to be in people's homes and talking to them in their yards. We have to create that relationship, and they're doing so. Evangelism has not stopped in India. Benevolent work has not stopped in India. You can see in the top picture up there, that's a room full of bags of rice. During the COVID crisis, they had several needs. One was oxygenators, machines that were battery powered that could be sent to villages where individuals are suffering because of COVID. Young people in India. I'm 40. And there were people younger than me who were dying simply because they could not breathe. And so there's an effort being put forth in India to buy these oxygen concentrators, but the greater need of that is food. Most of the Christians in which the areas in which we work, they depend on the fields. If they can't go into the field and work, they might not get paid that day and they might not eat. They don't have pantries. There's not a Walmart or a Dollar General they can run down to. And so food is a great effort and it's a great benevolent tool. You can see the preachers in the middle picture there. The preachers will convene and come together for the preachers' meeting. They'll receive their monthly support, and they'll have food that they'll take back to the village to help the Christians, but also others who are in need. In Luke 10, 29 and following, Jesus answers the question, "Who is my neighbor?" And he gives the parable of the Good Samaritan. And notice that it's the Samaritan. Jesus uses a Samaritan, one that Jews despised. But he uses a Samaritan as an example. The priest and the Levite walked on the other side of the road. They wouldn't dare as even look or go on the other side and see what was wrong with the man, but the Samaritan didn't ask any questions. In India, they don't ask any questions. I wish the bottom picture would show up. Maybe I need to advance the slide. There we go. The bottom picture, there's the doctor on the left. Unfortunately, he passed away a few months ago, but he was a faithful Christian. He died from health complications, but he worked in the hospital there. It was ran by Christians. And the man pictured on the right was a patient. Severe abdominal pains. Because the hospital's there, he's able to go. So many times in India, we can't understand why someone would do this. But if they're hurt or injured and they know it's not good, many times they'll just stay in their homes. A woman was severely burned by oil several years ago, and they said, "Why don't you carry her to the hospital?" They don't think that way, to go to the hospital, and she died a few days later. But because the hospital is available, because it's an evangelistic, benevolent tool, that man had emergency surgery, and while he's lying in his hospital bed, you and I would go to an individual and say, "You know, I'm so glad the surgery went well. Could we come by and see you next week and sit down and have a Bible study?" And there'd be nothing wrong with that. But in India, their culture is different. They're going and preaching to the man as he's recovering. He's waking up from anesthesia. They're talking to him about Jesus. And in just a few short days, this man recovering in the hospital, they taught him the gospel, and he put on Christ in baptism. 12 souls last year were saved through the efforts of the hospital. And who knows how many other individuals, if they're converting 12, what about all the other patients that they spoke to and that left the hospital knowing about Jesus, knowing about the church and salvation, and maybe at some point later on will become New Testament Christians? Benevolent work is still going on in India. Persecution has always been a problem in India, and it will always be a problem in India. Picture there is a young girl. Her home was firebombed because her mother was a Christian. This is not a widespread problem that every Christian everywhere in India is facing, but they are facing persecution because they have a government that's Hindu-based and that they don't believe in Christianity. They hate Christianity. The work in India has suffered because of a Hindu extremist group, but the Christians remain diligent. So many times when I hear story after story after story, I think about the book of Acts, and that when the Christians faced severe persecution, we find that they grew and they were happy and they continue to serve the Lord. They're facing persecution. All Christians will. Paul writes to Timothy, "Yea, and all who will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution." You say, "Well, I'm not facing any persecution." Maybe it's because your mindset is so focused on serving God that nothing's going to stop you. And you think back and you say, "Well, you know what? I don't really have a good relationship with my sister." I do. My sister's a Christian. But maybe you don't have a good relationship with your sister because she chooses not to be a follower of Jesus Christ. She's turned away from the Lord. And you know, I cannot fellowship with one who's turned away from the Lord. And maybe that's persecution. You're facing that. And that relationship is severed. Or maybe it's at your work. You wouldn't lie on that report. You wouldn't change those numbers up to make things look a little bit better this month. The next month we'll make up for it. Or maybe you wouldn't go drink at the bar. That's happened to me. I wouldn't go drink with my coworkers, and so therefore I didn't find favor with them. There's no promotion there. Maybe you suffered in those ways and haven't realized it. But no, we won't have our homes firebombed. We won't be kicked out of our homes. We won't have our lives threatened. But they are in India and they remain faithful to the Lord. Preacher support. We mentioned the fact of preachers. There were a couple of months where things were so severe and the situation in India was very bad. The preachers did not receive their support. We're thankful that it has continued for several months, and each month they're able to meet and receive the support that they need to continue to work. The great news is not a single preacher that we know of has left the faith. Not a single preacher we know of have said, I just can't do this anymore. I can't preach anymore. Unfortunately, I know men who say, "Oh, that job doesn't pay enough. I won't make enough money. I want more money." And so they don't preach the gospel because it's about money. In India, it's not about money. They don't receive the $50 support that they so greatly depend on. They still continue to preach the gospel. You can see pictures here of the preachers in their meetings. They'll come together, receive their support. They'll come and encourage one another and go back to the villages and preach. Orphan support. We mentioned the orphans earlier. For a time in India, the government, which has nothing to do with that system, still told the orphanages, send the children away because of their fear of COVID. So the children had nowhere to go. Most of them, both of their parents were dead or had been neglected so long that they don't know where their parents are. So Christians took them in. And as soon as they could go back to the orphanages, they went back to the orphanages. And they're safe. And as we mentioned earlier, it's a great system there. They're being taught the gospel, provided an education, being fed, and they many times become Christians. Now to more of our Bible study. We have a theme each year, and this year our theme is that Christianity requires commitment. In the sermon the last hour, we mentioned Matthew 16:24, and the context there, the fact that Peter rebuked the Lord, and he told the Lord, no, you're not going to go to Jerusalem, you're not going to die. And Jesus rebukes Peter and says, get behind me, Satan. And it would be nice to think that Peter changed at that moment. He realized, I was wrong. It is about you, Jesus, and I know you must suffer. But if you continue to read later in Matthew, Matthew doesn't give us the name of the individual, but John does. That Peter, even in the garden when they came to get Jesus, was still so boldly attached to his idea that it's not going to be this case. It's going to be the way I want it to be. And he took out his sword, his fishing knife, probably about 18 inches, and he cuts off Malchus's ear. It was even in the garden where Peter says, no, it's not going to happen. So in that context, Jesus speaks the following words. He says, if any will come after me, the word man's not there, it's in the King James, but in the original language, it's not there. If any will come after me, that's a great message. Because anyone who desires to follow after Jesus can be a follower of Jesus. It represents a desire. You and I must have a desire to follow Jesus. A true follower of Jesus is going to have a desire. If we're going to be committed to Christ and His cause, we must have a desire. That's clear. That's plain and evident. He continues, he says, let him deny himself. That's probably the most difficult aspect in a person's life. They want to follow Jesus. They love Him. They say they believe in Him. But when it comes to denying self, it comes to saying it's not about me. We talked about that in the sermon about discipleship. This is the point of self-denial. I must have a desire to follow Jesus, but I must be willing to deny self. He continues and says, and take up his cross. We talked about what that meant in the last hour. It means that I'm willing to go all the way. That I'm willing to die to self. And I'm willing to go all the way and be that living sacrifice. It represents, you and I must have, let me get the next point, please. We must have a diligent effort. We must put forth diligent effort. And then, there we go. And the last point, and follow me. There must be a desire. There must be self-denial, diligent effort, and there must be continued focus. So our theme this year, if we were in India and come back from India, this will be our theme for the whole idea. We haven't been able to go. Lord willing, we'll be able to go in the future. But our theme this year and our study for the remainder of the time is Christianity requires commitment. The first point is Christianity requires a dedicated way of life. I mentioned to you earlier about the idea of persecution and what happens in India. And here is one example, a sister in Christ who faced severe persecution. Vijaya grew up a Hindu, as most Indians do. Her husband, a Hindu, a hater of Christianity. We mentioned the church buildings and the PA system. She lived in a village where there was a church building. And remember, the PA system's on the outside of the building. We would probably have the police called on us if we put speakers out towards the apartments. Someone would probably complain. They would call the police. But in India, they don't do that. So the speakers are on the outside of the church building. And in her village, she couldn't help but hear the message of Jesus Christ. And she had an interest. She had a desire. I want to know more about Jesus and His church and about salvation. But as you and I know very clearly, so often it stops at desire. I appreciate the fact that you put lessons on live stream on Facebook. I listen to so many when I drive that are found on YouTube and Facebook and so forth. But so many times we can share those things on Facebook and we can send out things and people have a desire, but it stops there. But in Vijaya's case, a Christian cared enough. And not only did they put it on the speaker, but they came and knocked on her door. And when they knocked on her door, she said, yes, I've been listening and I'm interested. And they invited her, come, please come to our assembly and find out more about the church. So she did so in secret because she knew what would happen if her husband said, you're going to that Christian worship. And so she did so in secret. It didn't take long. She knew she needed to become a New Testament Christian. She put on Christ in baptism and continued to worship God. Her husband found out and immediately he kicked her out of the home. That so often is the persecution that men and women face. They're kicked out of their homes. In our sister's case here, she was immediately sent out on the street. She can't hire a lawyer. That doesn't happen in India. She can't go to family members. They're all Hindu. She can't go to them and say, please help me. Let's go get my stuff. We're going to fight this. He can't do that. That never happens. You can't do that. Young men Often when they're married, they live with their parents. That happens at times. What happens if they choose to become Christians? Their parents find out, their inheritance is cut off. Their family disowns them and may never speak to them again. Persecution happens, and in this case, our sister faced it, but she had a dedicated way of life. She recognized what Jesus says we must do. Have a desire, self-denial, diligent effort, continued focus. So she leaves. What's she going to do? Quit the Lord? It's easier to go back home and say, I'll forget Christianity, but she doesn't. She takes her son with her, and she moves to Rampa, one of the cities in the state in which we work. And there's a congregation there and some widows, and she moves in with the widows. She converts her son, and she stays so diligent in her efforts and continued focus, she's able to convert 4 Hindu women, some of the very women who persecuted her. You and I must remain committed to Christ and must have a dedicated way of life. She's one example of what it truly means to be a follower of Jesus. Point number 2, Christianity requires a life full of service. Picture here on the right is one of the many preachers. This is Brother Sam Pathy. He's been preaching for over 30 years. And I use him as an example because he fits the mold of 1 Corinthians 15:58 and 2 Timothy 4:2. He's continuing in service for the Lord. He knows that his labor is not in vain in the Lord. If he remains steadfast and unmovable, always abounding. Last year during the pandemic, he converted 178 souls. In places where the government said, you come out of your home, we're going to arrest you. In villages where the sick could have been lying everywhere, but the gospel was still being taught and he still converted souls. Of those 178, 6 were denominational preachers. They're converted to Christ. They've left the era of denominationalism, and 2 of those men now want to become preachers in the Lord's church. You and I must live a life full of service. That's the great part about being a Christian. You could be 98 a Christian and still serve the Lord. It doesn't wane as we get older. It doesn't go away. Young people, you can serve the Lord. You know that very well. We can serve the Lord all our lives. And here's one example of a Christian who understands that. A third point. Christianity requires going into all the world. And that really could be the first slide. That's really the whole idea about the work in India, is that we go into all the world. But this is more about what's happening in India as an encouragement for you and I. Luke 19 and verse 10, really Jesus sums it up. His mission was to come and to seek and save that which was lost. Mark 16, 15 and 16, we're very familiar with. Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. But what does that mean in India? Go into all the world. We're mission-minded. We think about going into other places. We think about going in our neighborhoods, even into Missouri, in which you've chosen to do. There's a village in India. It's a village of thieves and robbers. And the government, their answer to this problem is, we'll just put signs on the entrances into the village and warn people don't go there. So there are signs posted up that says, do not enter into this village because thieves and robbers live here. Their intent is to rob people of their goods and of gold when they come to the markets to try to sell things. But there are still souls in the village. They don't allow the government to dictate. They could easily say, it's not safe there. It's very dangerous. The government's told us don't go there. How often do you and I look down a street at a home or think about a neighborhood or an individual and say, I don't think they'll be a good candidate. I don't think they would, they don't care. That house, I don't think I'm going to knock on that door. That street, that's a bad part of town. We can't have that attitude. They don't have that attitude in India, and you and I can't have that attitude also. We must be willing to go into all the world. The woman pictured there on the left, her husband is in jail because he's a thief. He's Hindu, and he hates Christians, but she heard the gospel, become a New Testament Christian, and she's ready to face whatever comes her way when her husband gets out of jail. Maybe he's receptive to the truth. Maybe he kicks her out, and she's like our sister Vijaya, but she'll remain faithful to the Lord. The man pictured there at the bottom, he's not a thief or a robber. He just lives in the village, but he was a man in Islam. It took a year of study. That tells us a little bit about how long the Christians have been going to this village and teaching the gospel. But for a year, it took. And finally, he left the era of Islam and put on Christ in baptism. But what happens? These are just 2 examples of many. What happens if we don't go into all the world? What happens if we neglect to go down the street or go to a house or talk to a coworker because we're afraid of what might happen? Their souls too. And they're doing so in the roughest, most dangerous places in India. Are we willing to do it in the safe streets in our neighborhood? The fourth point, Christianity requires knowledgeable preachers. We don't de-emphasize knowledgeable Christians, but we understand what Paul writes in Romans chapter 10. How are people going to hear unless a preacher is there to preach? We have two schools of preaching. We focus on the Tooney School of Preaching. It is like the Memphis School of Preaching. It's a place where a man dedicates 2 full years of study. He's supported by a congregation or individuals, and sometimes American support, so he can go and spend 2 full years at that school. Well, we have the Herald School of Biblical Studies, and that's really a mission for this year and continuing on because the school is growing. This school specializes in educating men who were denominational preachers. You have Pentecostalism, you have Mormonism, you have Catholicism, the Baptists, the Methodists. You think of it, it's there in India. So many times those men are not turned off to studying the Bible. They'll go study with Christians. They don't care if it's people from the Church of Christ, if they're whatever. They'll go study, and so many times they hear the truth, and they want to leave Pentecostalism. Say last Sunday or last Monday there's a Bible study, and they left Pentecostalism, want to become a New Testament Christian. I want to preach for the Lord. It's not wise to send them out the following Sunday. So this school is designed for those men to go and study 2 weeks each month, the first week and the third week, and they receive $10 for that week. $10. $50 total, 30 of it is to go into the school to help pay for things at the school. But for $20, that's $10 a week. They're leaving their families behind if they have families, whatever job they have, and they're going and spending 5 full days of study from sunup to sundown for $10. They're committed. And we keep praying for this school. Right now, they're meeting in the upstairs of the women's, widow's home there, and they're staying in the upstairs of the boys' orphanage. In the future, if it continues to grow, there'll be a need, and maybe they could have their own building to stay in and study. The last point is Christianity requires using every authorized means possible. Think about what Paul said in 1 Corinthians 9. It's not confusing what Paul says. He says, to a Jew, I become a Jew. To those with the law, I become as one with the law. Without the law, he'll be willing to do whatever it takes as long as it's authorized. Paul wasn't saying, okay, well, we'll take the scriptures and we'll change it just a little bit if we can convince them to listen, convince them to become a Christian. That's not the point. The point is you and I must be willing to do whatever it takes. If that means I have to change my job or I have to change my habits so that I can try to reach someone, I'll be willing to do so. We mentioned earlier the television station. They want to do everything they can in India. Radio, television, street preaching. They want to do whatever it takes. They want to have a television station. They can reach, and their research has been well documented. They've done a great job in preparing for this. 13 villages, 10 towns, 20,000 or 13 districts, 100 cities, 20 villages, and estimated 24 million people have satellite television. It's an expensive startup. It's $25,000. That's equipment, that's studio. That covers the basis, but each year it's $150,000. I don't know how much it costs GBN, but they're supported by Brotherhood Support. So many individuals and congregations support that work. It's expensive. Out of the $150,000, it's $120,000 a year just to be on television. And sometimes people ask, well, it's a Hindu nation. Why would they allow a Christian 24/7 network on satellite television? Money. You're going to hand a Hindu $120,000 to be on TV? They don't care what you're going to say, because money talks, but it's expensive. Please pray for this effort and other efforts so that in the future they may be able to be on television and to reach souls through that means. I don't know how much time we have remaining, but I try to go very quickly so that if you have any questions, please feel free to ask questions. Someone will come around and bring the microphone if you have any questions. Any questions? Young people have any questions? Parents? Adults? Yes, have a hand raised right here.
So as we were talking about being able to support preachers that are involved at the school, let's see, which was it? Sorry, at the Herald School. Is there a desire then for those preachers to transition to being self-supported by congregations in the area at some point?
That is a very great question. And that's something often that gets asked is what happens in that situation about self-supporting congregations. There are some self-supported congregations. there are sometimes in a village or an area, there's a means for the congregation, because they have income, that they're able to support that preacher, is authorized in Scripture. But most of the congregations and most of the Christians are so poor that even in a congregation of this size in India, they may not have enough money to continue to function as a congregation. The largest of congregations, usually about 100 individuals. The average from 40, most are smaller, about 40 to 100. And despite how much they would love to be self-supporting, because of their extreme poverty, that situation will probably never change. There are some preachers that are supported by the congregation and are doing well. It just depends on the area in which they are in. If you imagine going out in the most remote area, and they live day to day with their livestock or the crops that they're raising, and too many times, unfortunate, they'll never be able to be self-sustaining. That's a great question, and that's a question that needs to be answered. Yes, sir. I'll do the best I can with the widow's home. The widow's home, as we mentioned earlier, there are 9 orphans' homes and 8 widow's homes. And one of the orphanages, there isn't a widow's home. I don't know why. Maybe there's plans in the future. But a widow's home is intended for women because of age or health, that they are widows indeed. And so they don't have family that would support them or take care of them. We understand, we read in Scripture, Paul writes to Timothy and speaks about that situation that was specific, that sometimes there are widows who are widows indeed. They really need help because they have no family members to take care of them. And in the event that there is a younger woman, Dad can tell you this, because when they were in January 2020, there was one evening, and it was actually because of the support of this congregation, that sewing machines were given away to younger widows. Women that are at home and are able to take care of themselves and have children. And so sewing machines are provided for younger widows. But the widows that are in the widows' homes, they're there because of their age, because of their health, because they have no supporting family. And their goal is really to raise the children and to help teach the children. Mom can help you and tell you a lot more details. Maybe there's things that I don't know to say that Mom would understand and know. Yes, sir.
How many congregations do the preachers preach at? Is it one congregation per preacher, or do they go to several?
That's a good question. There are about 2,600 congregations total. Not all of those are supported because of their self-sustaining, because they can support the preacher and they don't need outside support. But 2,600 congregations, there are over 1,000 preachers. And you can do the math pretty quick. Now, sometimes it may be that a preacher preaches at one congregation. He lives in that village and he preaches there. But oftentimes, they're on their bicycles. And it may be that, let's say, Village A, they're meeting at 9 a.m. in the morning, and he's preaching there. Well, Village B is waiting, and he'll get there as soon as he can, but they're waiting patiently. And Mom and Dad and others have told stories where that may take them 3 hours to get somewhere, but the people are there singing and they're waiting. And so it could be that he has to travel a long ways. And so there's a preacher who's going to 2, 3, some rare are going to 4 congregations on the Lord's Day. And so in India, where time is not of essence as it is here, the Christians may be meeting and they're waiting patiently when the preacher arrives, and then, of course, they worship the Lord. I hope that answers your question. Any other questions? Something that's often asked is, what about elderships? What about in India? What is the situation in the congregations with elders? And about 70% of the congregations have elders. That's good news, because you don't often hear that about foreign works. I'm familiar with foreign works, been to Jamaica before, and in other countries, not always that case. Either there's men that are not qualified, or because of too many times the preacher enjoys what he's doing, and he's the main man, and so sometimes it's de-emphasized that elders are needed in every congregation. In India, there are about 70% of the congregations have elders, so that's good news. We want to hear that they are trying to follow the New Testament pattern, trying to be self-sustaining, having the preacher supported by the means of the individuals of the congregation. The church building, something interesting about the church buildings, it's $8,000. That's an expense because of the metal. It's hard to come by in India, but if a church building is to be built, it's a 6-month process. But it's not an extravagant building. Most of the time, there's no electricity to the building. It's a block building There are certain requirements. The village, the congregation needs to be at least 50 members. The concern is that if the membership wanes, the building might be taken over by the government or by another group in the area. So they want a good, strong congregation, at least 50 individuals. The land must be provided. Either they're able to come up with the means or someone donates it, or it's a member's land. So you have to have at least 50 members. That's an advisable, smart thing to do. Then there's the land must be provided. And then the individuals of the congregation, the members of the church, are actually helping in building the building. They'll pay this one man, a bricklayer, to come and help. Someone who knows what they're doing, but the members are involved in the work. That's the bell, but that doesn't mean you can't ask any more questions. Please ask questions. Feel free to email me. I'll give you my information, and I'll help you in every way that I can. Thank you for your time and for your questions.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.